Game On 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Hello, you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM on this Monday night. Hugh Cal with you until 8 o'clock tonight. Lots to talk about after the weekend that was. We have Eamon Dunphy on the 1-1 draw at the Aviva Stadium last night. Niall Ginnigan on what next for Clare Hurling. Joe Brolly, and arguably one of the worst ever football matches in Croke Park between Dublin and Derry on Saturday night. And Trevor Brennan on his firstborn son playing rugby for France. Controversial, I know. Alan Coyle is with me in the studio. I'll get to him in just a second. If you missed anything from the weekend that was, have a listen to this.
One day when the light is glowing, I'll be in my castle golden. But until the gates are open, I just wanna feel this moment.
Here comes the corner towards the back post, headed in by Hullen. A chance for Long, and he's equalised! And the Irish supporters are on their feet.
I thought the second half would cause them all sorts of problems. You know, maybe the first 35 minutes they were on top, but after that we got really into it, and you know, you could tell there was a goal coming, and thankfully I was the man to get in the end of the ball.
Second half performance was really fantastic. Had them on the back foot the whole second half, and it would have been a shame if we didn't get something out of the game tonight.
Killian Buckley, who has landed the score for Kilkenny in injury time, and that is it. In a dramatic finish, Killian Buckley has landed the score for Kilkenny to give them a 1-point win over Clare and to secure their top flight status for another year.
Absolutely got it. I think we're the better team today. But fair play to Kilkenny, they got there. We hats off to them at the end, you know, we've no complaints, but it's disappointing.
We can't control how teams set themselves up. We're invigorated by the challenge, and it's a new chapter for us, and we're looking forward to that.
You know, the character and the fight back in the second half from what we were looking at half time was pretty pleasing.
Played nicely all week, didn't hold very many putts the last 2 days, but ball striking was very good, so lots of chances, and didn't find myself struggling for power too often, which is always nice. I did my best, and yeah, quite happy with the week.
Yeah, funky Zeit mit Bruno out of us. That do it for you, baby?
Remember that scooter fella?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
That's exactly what it was like.
2FM's Game On. Can't wait for the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National, including the two people in this very studio, to celebrate. 2FM Boyle Sports giving you the chance to win a VIP day at the Grand National at Ferry House on Monday the 6th of April. Each night, one lucky listener will win eight tickets, that's eight of you in total, to the Grand National itself. But on Friday this week, we'll upgrade one of you to the VIP package, 4-star overnight accommodation, VIP passes to the big race itself, and €500 spending money as well. All you have to do, listen to this clip, a Grand National winner, and tell us who trained it.
They're inside the last 100 yards, and it's shut the front door. It's going to give Barry Garrity and JP McManus the Boyle Sports National Golden Wonder second, Sir Shadon is third, Jamesy Hall is next, and then Fulton.
So there you have it, two trains shut the front door. Text us in 51552 with your name and your answer, and we'll have one winner for tonight's eight tickets for the Grand National itself on Easter Monday. And as I said, that chance to be upgraded for VIP entry on Friday. Now, Alan Cawley.
Hugh, good evening.
What did you think of last night? Are you happy that we got a point? Are you disappointed we didn't make better of it? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed the match, Hugh. I really did. It was the first time that when I was walking into the ground that there was a real buzz, a real sense that there was a proper match going on.
That was the Polish crowd that was
there. Well, it was all them. But they made for the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And because there was so much riding on the game as well, so it made for a really good atmosphere. Then obviously the game kicked off and I was really excited by Martin O'Neill's team lineup. I said it last week here Monday night, he's got to play Wes, so I was delighted to see Wes involved. He also played Brady, McGeady, so it was a really attacking lineup. That's what we've all been asking for and we got it, so we can't really complain. In the game itself, I thought the first half there wasn't a great deal in between both teams. It was scrappy enough, to be fair, the first half. It wasn't great. Poland probably had the better of the chances, the header that they missed, and then obviously the goal. We never really tested Fabianski. But I thought in the second half, they responded really well and they came out and had a proper go, got the fans off their seats. The atmosphere was unbelievable and they fully deserved the draw, Hugh. I thought they were very, very good in the second half.
It looked like Ireland were a little bit unsure of themselves in that first half an hour. Like there were a couple of players who just weren't fully comfortable with what they were being asked to do. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, probably is, because when you're playing Wes, you need to be feeding them the ball. Basically, everybody, it needs to be on basically on the same wavelength. That if you have two sitting midfielders, so Whelan and McCarthy, they've got to be feeding everything. So you have to be playing out through the back, through the midfield, and then try to find Wes in them little pockets, them little areas that he loves to pick up. But I felt in the first half we were caught between two stools. We weren't really doing that, and we ended up kind of punting it a bit long as well. And we didn't really want to see that, because you're not getting the best out of Wes then. You might as well not even have him playing.
But there are other players as well, Seamus McCarthy, like Liam Brady, we heard last night, was quite critical of him and the way he played. And it is fair to say that you see him for Everton, and the Seamus McCarthy for Everton and what we saw last night don't add up as the same person.
Well, it seems to be James McCarthy
Everton. James. Yeah. Well, I don't want to say Seamus Coach. Yeah, but James McCarthy.
But it seems to be James for Everton and Seamus for Ireland. Because, he never has the influence that he has at club form. I don't really see the fuss about him, I have to be honest. People are talking about this fella going to Arsenal, £20 million player. He's a good player, Hugh, but I don't really see the fuss, I have to say. Glenn Whelan, we all know what he does. He never gets on the ball. He's there to fill gaps and fill holes. Does he really do that? He went off after 70 minutes. Obviously, we were pushing on, so it's to sacrifice to one of the midfielders then. But Wes was excellent again, I thought. Not one of it, maybe not excellent, but he was very good. He was still always the one who was probing, looking to open things up, looking to get others playing. And that's what he gives us, Hugh. That's exactly what he gives us, and that's what we need, because if he's not there doing that, we'll just end up launching balls and it'll be just back to square one again.
Eamon Dunphy is on the line, as he is every Monday night. Hi, Eamon.
Hi, Hugh.
You've had a 24 hours now to digest this, Eamon, I suppose. What are your overall thoughts on Ireland's performance last night?
I thought it was very good after the 30th minute. For the first half an hour, everything Alan said there is right. Wes was playing up front with Robbie Keane, which was kind of stupid. But then he made the change. He brought John Walters in to play beside Robbie Keane. He brought Wes in off the, gave Wes a freer role, and he swapped McGeady around to the right wing. So in the last 10, 15 minutes of the first half, we threatened. Wes started getting on the ball. He played a couple of divine passes, really beautiful stuff. But he makes things happen, and that was a good sign. And it caused me at half time to think that we could get something out of the game, and John and Liam as well. And we came out in the second half and we really played, all driven by Wes, really. I think Whelan can't play at all. I mean, he doesn't do anything. He doesn't tackle. He doesn't get on the ball. He can't run. I don't know why he's playing for Stoke, and I don't know why he's playing for Ireland. McCarthy is really turning out to be a terrible flop. He doesn't do anything. He could be a holding player, perhaps doing what Whelan is supposed to be doing, because for Everton occasionally, I don't agree with you, he's a different player for Everton, he isn't. He's just got perhaps better players around him. But he still doesn't really move the ball forward. He never changes the tempo of the game. This is the key. What Wes Whelan does, he changes the tempo of the game. He ups it, he passes the ball, then he goes for the next ball, he gets it again, passes it again, and he'll go for the next ball if he can. He's always slipping little dangerous passes in and creating danger. You never see McCarthy doing that. Now, he is wondrously overrated. Jamie Carragher said last week that he'd love if it was one player he could take for Liverpool, it would be McCarthy. He said the only thing missing from his game was goals. That's nonsense. Now, Jamie Carragher was a great player, but he also thought Brazil would win the World Cup last year, right until they were beaten 7-0 by Germany. So, but the point about McCarthy is it's interesting, because he's a hyped player. He's a player that everyone thinks is far, far better than he is. And we haven't got time to waste with Whelan and McCarthy. And we have Stephen Quinn, who's a very, very good player. Good, young, busy player, always looking for the game, looking to do things. And he should have started last night. So we didn't get to where we are by accident. Wes Whelan didn't start against Georgia. He didn't start away to Germany. When he did come on against away to Germany, we picked up and we scored an equalising goal. And the manager says he might only play him at home. You know,
I don't understand that argument
like
at all.
Playing Xavi at home, you know,
yeah,
because he's too small. I mean, he's bigger actually than Xavi.
But what is his size got to do whether he plays well at home and away from home? Alan, can you? I don't understand this.
Yeah, there's a problem, Hugh, and it's not just it hasn't just happened recently in this country. This has gone back 15, 16, 20 years with Wes Hoolan. I know I've seen Wes. I played him when I was 15 years of age, and you think he's small now. He was half the size then, Hugh, right? And he was as good as he was back as he is now. He was back then. He was unbelievable. I remember getting into a car after a match with my dad. And the two of us looked at each other and we just said, the little fella. He was unbelievable, Hugh. And the problem is, and we had question marks all through the campaign, this argument crops up. Wes, is he strong enough? Is he physical enough? That's the mentality of this country. You have people here on the text machine who are getting on to us now and saying he gave the ball away two or three times. He's the type of player that's going to open doors and create things for you. He's not a player that's going 5 yards, 10 yards, sidewards, backwards, that it's easy to do. Anyone can do. The man on the street can do. When you have a fella who's going to open doors and unlock things and unlock teams and create things, he is going to give it away two or three times. But you have to put up with that, and you have to be able to say, I'm giving you full... basically, Martin O'Neill said to him, you go and open doors for us, Wes, and I live with that. That's the kind of things you have to do if you're going to live with a luxury player like him. And he's actually not. It's probably wrong of me to say he's a luxury player, because he works as hard as anyone. He's infectious. He wants to get on the ball. As Eamon said, people, there was a bigger roar last night for James McLean's tackle than a pass Wes played in the first half through to Seamus Coleman when we get in on the right. And that sums the whole thing up, Hugh.
But maybe, Eamon, just on that then, maybe we are just in this country, we are not au fait with the technical side of the game as much as we should be. We love that James McLean gets stuck in, drop a shoulder and get a big tackle in, but as someone like Wes comes in, the technical player who plays a little through ball that, you know, mightn't be perceived by most of the crowd, it goes unnoticed.
No, I don't agree with that. I think the crowd do notice. I think the crowd love Wes. I think they do appreciate the good stuff he's doing, and you know, that particular tackle from James McLean was absolutely mighty. it was amazing, and the guy never recovered from it. He's the guy who scored the goal as well. But I mean, it was a wonderful tackle. But you have to have a balance between two things. But the thing about Wes is that you know, Trapattoni never picked him once.
He made his debut in like 26.
For five years, this guy was in the wilderness. When we had Glenn Whelan in midfield and all sorts of collected dummies. and this guy wasn't getting a game. He was playing, incidentally, in the Premier League at the time for Norwich.
We've had a lot of texts, Eamon, from people. I'm just looking at the screen here. We've had a lot of texts from people saying that that you and Alan are being too blinkered in your view of Wes Hoolan. Here's one. I'm really sorry to be sending this message, but I really didn't see all the fuss about Wes last night. No. I know he's a quality baller, and what he did produce for us last night, he created zero chances for us. The only he could get the ball... What the hell is that?
Hold on a minute. He created the goal. He made the goal.
Yeah.
The ball, he was at the far post, the ball came in, he headed it right to Shane Long, headed down to Shane Long. Another player would have looped that to the far post and a keeper would have collected it. He was brilliant last night.
Another point about this, Eamon, and Eamon would agree with this here as well. He's playing with players and he's one step ahead of them. He's doing things and he's picking passes and they're not even on the same wavelength as him. See, the likes of Whelan McCarthy, he's finding pockets. This might sound like a ridiculous statement, Hugh, right? If he was Spanish, he'd be lorded.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'd be lorded.
But that's my point.
I've seen it. I've gone through it. I played in this league and managers are telling you don't work hard enough and you're no good to me in battles and all. And I'm kind of saying, is this not a game of football? It's not rugby.
I just make a point about Wes. He made more tackles last night than either James McCarthy or Glenn Whelan. He made twice as many tackles as Glenn Whelan and McCarthy put together. Got it?
Yeah.
Like, he made four or five tackles and won the ball. And the thing is about football punditry is that there's so many gobshites out there mouthing off. If you've got Jamie Carragher saying that James McCarthy is the best young midfield player in England, and I'd love him to go to Liverpool, then you are in commentary analysis hell. Because Jamie Carragher is a massive figure, rightly, because he was such a great player. But if he's saying that about, we've seen McCarthy, he's no good.
Is Robbie Keane past it, Eamon?
Yes. and has been for a while. I mean, he's playing the poor league, but I've got the height of regard for him and respect for him. Look at his goal scoring record, you know, and I've always been a big fan of his. I'm sure around the training camp and in the dressing room. Yeah, and he had a half chance last night, and he did well with the header, you know. But I don't think his legs will get him around the field, and that's the problem. And they had to augment him by bringing in John Walters, who isn't past it, you know, who's a big, aggressive lad. I don't like to say glibly that Robbie's past it, but I think he is, really. I don't think he can do anything. I don't think he can make the runs. I think he's feeble now, you know. And if you ever watch MLS, you see why, because it's a pretty poor league he's playing in.
He looks to be struggling.
I watched one of the games last week. The new league has just started. It's poor standard is. But look, Robbie Keane has been an absolute superstar for this country. But if you're coming, I think if you're playing one of the better nations like we are now, when you're talking about qualification, so Germany, Poland, Scotland, whoever it may be, playing him up front on his own, he got so isolated. He just hasn't the mobility anymore, unfortunately. Everyone gets old, Hugh. I thought we'd done a lot better when he had Walters up alongside him, because Walters playing on wide right as well is an absolute nonsense, because he gives you nothing wide right and he wants to be playing up front. And in fairness to him, he's as honest as the day is long, Walters. He threw himself about in the second half. He caused a lot of kind of just confusion at the back four for them and put himself around, and he done a lot better. And I think Robbie actually done a bit better as well, because he was up there alongside him. But playing him up front on his own is a major no-no.
Eamon, do you think we will qualify? We're 3 points behind Poland, 2 behind Germany and Scotland now. The Scots are up next in June in Dublin. Yeah. We have to win that match. We have to win pretty much nearly all the rest of our games.
Well, I think that we've got to. You see, you made 7 changes last night, and I think you took a gamble. I wouldn't play Robbie Brady at left back against a good team. I admire him for lots of reasons. He's very good on the ball. He's very good on dead balls. But he's not a left back, and you can't afford to play. Fullback is a hugely important position. It's not one of the glamour positions in the team, but it's massively, has to be learned. So I wouldn't do that. I'd play Wilson there, and maybe Keo beside John O'Shea. Wilson's a very good player. We can use him. He's versatile. I think we can't start with McGeady. We've got to start with McLean. McGeady just never does it.
No.
And then we have to put Stephen Quinn in the middle of the field, where he will work and want to play in a way that Glenn Whelan doesn't. And maybe put McCarthy in that holding role where Claude Makélélé used to play for Chelsea, because he will put his foot in McCarthy, and he will, you know, get possession and use the ball. But he's never going to give you anything penetrating going forward. And then of course play Wes, play John Walters in his right position, and perhaps Shane Long. It still needs more tweaks, that team, but we should never be where we are. We'd never have lost in Scotland if we'd have played Wes Houlihan in Scotland, and if we'd have picked the right team to play that game. But I still think we can qualify. I think if we play as well as we played for an hour last night, that's the last hour, we'll give Scotland a headache, and then we're back in it.
Just before we leave this, I need to ask you both, Alan, and start with you. I mean, Shay Given, there are some people who feel he should have done better for the goal. I mean, other than that, he didn't seem to put a foot wrong. Was it the right call to put him in goals, do you think?
I don't think so, no. I would have started Ford for a simple reason, that when Shay Given retired, that was him finished with international football. He obviously came back then. Martin O'Neill obviously wanted him back. But David Ford has done absolutely nothing wrong. And there's the famous old thing in football, if you've the jersey and you're doing your stuff, I think you should keep the jersey. Fair enough, Shay Given, like Robbie Keane, has been a superstar over the years. But I thought it was the wrong decision. Now, it didn't really have much impact on, you think he could have done better with the goal, possibly, but he didn't have a great deal to do. So it wasn't one of them where you could look at O'Neill today and question him starting him. But I felt sorry for David Ford. He had to bide his time a long time, Hugh, to get his chance, and he did that, and he's taken his chance since he's got it. And I thought he was harshly treated being left out last night.
It did seem quite harsh on David Ford, Eamon.
Yeah, I totally agree with Alan. I absolutely totally agree with him. And Ford is playing every week for Millwall. He's a good lad. He was brilliant in Germany, and he's been great for us. And I wouldn't want to be too harsh on Shay Given, who's been the greatest goalkeeper we've ever had in the Irish team. But I would have just said, for the goal, another keeper might have stopped it. It was a reflex thing, and you know, if you're not playing every week, which he isn't, then your reflexes aren't right for international football. So I think Alan is spot on.
Okay, we'll leave it there, Eamon. Listen, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Eamon Dunphy there. Look, just a few texts that we didn't get to. Just on the one that I started to read out, this is word for word of what came in, so I'm not, you know, trying to be smart about this. He created zero chances for us. The only he could get on the ball was on our goal side of their midfield. I just don't know what that means. So I wasn't being disrespectful. Yeah. I just couldn't make any sense of it. And obviously, you know. Anyway, 51552, keep them coming in. And I'll get to more of them as we go through the show. Now, Clare lost out to Kilkenny in another close battle yesterday. That result means Kilkenny stay in the top flight of the league for next season. But Clare dropped down a division. I'm delighted to be joined by former Clare hurler, Niall Gilligan. Niall, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Hugh.
It's great to have you on. Listen, it was a close battle, played in less than ideal conditions, I suppose, overall. But I don't think if Clare had won that game, Niall, that there could have been too many complaints about it.
Yeah, well, look, it was a very tight, and it was nearly the best game of the league yesterday. And maybe, you know, for any of the games I've seen in the league, you know, it was a real tough, intense battle, you know. But I suppose, you know, Clare supporters will point to the fact that, you know, maybe there's... that they shouldn't have been in that position. But, you know, at the same time, we can look back to 2013 when Clare won the All-Ireland. Clare and Cork contested the relegation. Hmm. Clare fans supposed to be hoping for something similar.
Yeah, I watched the game, and a couple of things stood out for me, just from the Clare side of thing. First of all, I mean, it was a first chance in a long time to have a good look at Shane O'Donnell for me. His movements, Niall, I mean, his skill in tight situations, his ability to make that space for himself is just brilliant to watch. He gives this impression, maybe because he's a very relaxed style, that he's not necessarily going on full throttle, yet he just leaves lads for dead.
Yeah, he's an exceptional talent, and I suppose... You know, between injury and one thing and another, you know, he hadn't a fantastic season, you know, last year. But, you know, we all saw the 3-3 he scored in the All-Ireland final in 2000, the replay in 2013. But, you know, David Fitz and his management are trying to play a system whereby that they give, you know, the inside forward, you know, like Shane O'Donnell, and maybe they play two-man full forward, and where Conor McGrath went off injured yesterday, and that, you know, that they played the sweeper system again yesterday, and, you know, it seemed to work for them. You know, Tony Kelly got 7 points in play yesterday from the middle of the field, and Shane O'Donnell got 1-3, and if Conor McGrath hadn't gone off, you'd have to say that he would have created a lot more for him. But it's probably at the back is where Clare's problem is, and, you know, and has been for some time. You know, I was just looking over the number of games there in the league. You know, Clare conceded, they're conceding 25, 26 points per game. And I suppose, you know, like both Galway and Kilkenny have conceded more than them. Scored more than Galway than Kilkenny in the league and were still relegated, you know. So it's the defence is the problem, and the game they're trying to play is where when they win the ball in defence, they're trying to work it slowly up the field, kind of a football way, so to speak, and then when they get space inside, hit it out to the wings, and where Shane O'Donnell is very good to get out in front and you know, and try and create the scores there. So we're scoring a lot. We're conceding too much, you know.
It's just on your phone there. Sorry, Niall. Is there maybe your hands just over the line? Can you just give us a 1-2 there, and just we'll see if we have to bring you back or if it's a bad line.
1-2, can you hear me?
Yeah, it's just it's a little bit. Yeah, we're okay. So the lads, just double checking in terms of the team. Then in terms of the squad, and I suppose this is what people outside of Clare, Niall, won't know too much about. You know, Davies had to deal with a few things over the last few weeks, and, you know, most of them pretty negative stuff. What shape is this Clare panel in at the moment?
Well, I suppose you want that, like, and it's not sitting on the fence here. People don't really know, I suppose, what's going on in the camp, you know, from, you know, and what way team spirit is. And Davy is beating the drum and telling people that you know, that the players that he has there now are all in good spirits. And I suppose the performance yesterday showed that. But it is quite worrying. But say, like, if you look at it, you know, you have Nicky O'Connell and Davy Holland gone off the panel. Podge Collins is gone from last year, and it's the rumor on the ground is that Colm Galvin is going to the States for the summer. So, like, if a player like his caliber leaves, as well as, you know, I suppose from Podge Collins from last year, it will be a big blow. So, and I think the media over the last couple of weeks haven't let the Nicky O'Connell, Davy O'Holland thing go, you know. We'll say Joe Ballin yesterday's Independent, and Colm O'Rourke the week before, and the Irish Times now have run it 3 weeks running. So I suppose, you know, they really need a kind of, how would you say, a low-key run into the first round of the championship against Limerick, you know. But it's very difficult to hurl, and I know from experience, going back to 1998, you know, there was a big saga at that time with Jellog Nan and Colin Lynch in the Munster final against Waterford. And as a player, it's very difficult to concentrate when you know, all these sidelines and these things are going on in the background. So, you know, players really need a low-key build-up now to the Limerick game, the championship.
And if they have that, I mean, if they don't have any more problems in personnel or kind of just stories that they wouldn't want to be having to address getting out into the media, as you said, do you think that, you know, Clare, come the summer, come the better weather, the harder, faster game, if you like, the young players that they have and the skill that they have at their disposal, do you think that they are in with a decent shout and has to be title contenders? I think 9-1 from 6-1, even on the basis of that defeat over the weekend, Niall.
Yeah, that's it. I guess on Saturday evening, Paddy Power Book Pickers were going 9-1, clear to win All Ireland, and then this morning 6-1, so they must have seen something. But, you know, no doubt about it, you know, the three counties with the best talented players are Kilkenny, Tipperary and Clare, you know, and after that, I think, you know, there is a fairly large gulf. Like, no counties, you know, have the Tony Kellys, the Conor McGraths, the Bubbles Dwyers, Jamie Canlan, TJ Reid, Richie Power. None of the other counties have those kind of forwards or you know, match winners. And definitely, like, if Clare can, you know, get into Croke Park with the legs and the talent they have, I would put them. My favourites for the championship are Clare and Tipperary, you know. And but you know, I think Kilkenny, with the losses they've had, you know, will maybe struggle a little. We saw yesterday the trouble they were in at full back. So I suppose, you know, I think if Clare can, as I say, have a low key run and you know, try and keep out of trouble, so to speak, just, you know, they have a great chance come summer.
Okay, pleasure to talk to you, Niall. Thanks many for your time.
Thank you,
Niall Gilligan. There, just apologies that the line wasn't great, but yeah, interesting thoughts. It's something we'll have to come back to, I presume, before the championship gets underway proper. It's not long to go now. Just a flavour of some of your texts, 51552. Could you please discuss the awarding of the man of the match to Wes last night? I'm generally a fan of him, but last night I didn't see him create. I think we addressed that. Robbie's been legendary for Ireland. Last night, up on his own, he's just not pwned at all. McGeady, very poor. And McCarthy played with fear, but the rest did really well. Comes in another. Tony Waterford asking us to ask the lads if Robbie has passed, and we did that, Tony. I agree that Wes Hoolihan played very well and is worth his place, but how come he's not playing at a higher level in England, and how come he's not an automatic pick for Ireland, says John. Do you want to answer that?
It's a mentality thing, Hugh. Across the British Isles, for the last, I don't know how many number of years, all they wanted was big, strong, physical fellas, and the little fella all suffered. And that was the problem with Wes going back since he was a schoolboy. He wasn't even picked for Ireland under 15, 16, 17s. I remember going up to camps thinking, where's Wes? Oh, he's unbelievable. He was the best player around, and not getting picked because of his size. And he's had to kind of work and work over the years. Eventually, there's only managers in the minority who might take him, in the sense that they fancy the footballers, and he's had to work and work and eventually got his opportunity, but his talent has shone through in the end.
Another text on that. Too small, the FAI's favourite words all the way from grassroots, must be ingrained in FAI coaching courses, which I suppose just backs up what you were just saying there. Dunphy said last night pre-match that this was our best team. He did not criticise Whelan and McCarthy before the game, says Liam Wexford. I think he did, actually. The lads singled out that McCarthy needed to have a huge game if Ireland were going to win this match, and then they said afterwards that he just didn't have that game, which I think is pretty fair analysis of what on. If size matters, what about Messi? Comes in another one on 51552. And Wes needs to play, simple as. This argument he's too small is crazy. Messi's no bigger than him, and he always plays. And just one last one. Dunphy banged the drum for Wes for so long, he can't afford to be objective. As a result, he wrongly blamed Coleman at half time. Their goal came from a mad tackle from Wes, Frank and Kilkenny. I don't think that was Wes's fault. I think Robbie Brady got a bit stuck between two minds and lost the ball. And then the shot came in, and Shay Given couldn't do anything about it, I think.
Yeah, I don't think Frank. What match was Frank watching?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry,
take a break,
Frank.
We're back after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the Straight Talking Savings Bank.
Okay, you're very welcome back. Just a quick reminder of our competition tonight to win those 8 tickets for the Grand National and go into our draw to win the VIP package, 4-star overnight accommodation, VIP passes, €500 spending money. All you have to do is tell us this Grand National winner, who trained them?
They're inside the last 100 yards and it's shut the front door. It's going to give Barry Garrity and JP McManus, the Boy Sports National Golden Wonder second, Sir Shadon is third, Jamesy Hall is next.
Okay, so who trained shut the front door to Grand National victory last year? Text 51552 with your name and your answer. We'll have a winner before the end of tonight's show. Now, we're staying with Gaelic games and football now, because Dublin just about saw off Derry and Croke Park on Saturday night in the league. Pretty horrendous game for everyone to watch, I think you'll agree. Conditions weren't good, obviously, but even allowing for that, some are saying this was one of the worst games of football ever played in GAA headquarters. RT analyst Joe Brawley is on the line for me, Derry footballer, of course. And Joe, you're very welcome, first of all. Is it as bad as everyone was making out, the game on Saturday night?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's plenty more where that came from. I was there, and I mean, everybody started booing after about 15 minutes. And, you know, we've been here. I mean, when sort of, I mean, I call it football and myxomatosis. You know, Jim McGuinness introduced it in 2011. Mm. And we saw the Dublin-Donegal semi-final that year. I think the score was 7-5. And again, you know, Croke Park was booing then. But that was because both teams played the blanket defence that day. Pat Gilroy decided to sort of match Donegal's tactics. And you know, Donegal sort of, for a while, you could say, well, look, you know, it's still quite a good spectacle, because they were coming up against teams who were playing man-to-man football, and then the games were looking quite exciting. So the Dubs against Donegal last year, where the Dubs just pushed everybody forward. But what's happening now increasingly is that the myxomatosis is spreading throughout the land. And I mean, in Connacht, there's only one team now, Mayo, who are still trying to play football, as we understand it. In Ulster, there are no teams. And Leinster, very few. And Munster, all of them are now playing the blanket defence, including Kerry, you know, and it culminated in last year's All-Ireland final. And the reality is that, you know, people are becoming increasingly disconsolate about the game. I mean, I went up to Kavanagh's after the match on Saturday. You know, I had my youngsters with me, you know. And my son, who's 8, said, as we were walking away, he said, that was a pile of shite, Daddy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we went into Kavanagh's bar, you know, and there were 7 or 8 of the underage St. Vincent's coaches there, lads who I know, who had left at half-time. And, you know, this is a similar picture over the weekend. I mean, I was at a charity event today, and there were 6 or 7 pretty disconsolate current county footballers who played yesterday. And, you know, all are disconsolate about the way they're being trained to play now. You know, it's a race to the bottom. And, you know, it's dispiriting to the individual. It's destroying the ethos of the game. And, you know, it's really... I mean, like Mickey Hart and people like that are saying... I mean, Mickey Hart said, well, look, you know, we're not in the business of entertainment. Well, then fuck off and play behind closed doors.
Yeah.
If you're not in the business of entertainment. I mean, have you ever heard such a perverse thing?
Well, the thing about it is, I mean, if you ask...
Brian McIver, the Derry manager, after the game on Saturday night, he was apologising. He said, well, we don't want to play this way. I mean, I know it's awful to watch. Hmm. Well, then don't play that way. You know, I mean, and really the thing has become abysmal now. It's a race.
Well,
it
depends on which way you come from it, Joe. Do you want to entertain the crowd, or do you want to win the matches? And if you ask, and I'm just saying, if you ask McGuinness, if you ask Mickey Hart why they reverted into their own, if you ask, you know, Brian McIver why Derry played like that on Saturday night, they'll say the only way we could take Dublin on was to play this way. No?
Well, I mean, you're better to go out in your shield, you know. I mean, the reality is that it's muck. You know, and you can, I mean, I hear younger analysts in particular, you know, saying, well, it's fascinating, it's intriguing, you know, it's like a game of chess. There isn't much chess being played in GAA clubs all over Ireland.
No.
It's not a game we're particularly interested in. You know, and the reality is that, you know, there is an obligation owed to the game and to the Gaels of Ireland. There is an obligation owed, and I think increasingly, you know, people are starting to see that, and county footballers are starting to see that as well. I mean, I met 6 or 7 of them today, and like, they were sheepish, and they're, you know, they hate to play this way. I mean, these guys are skilled footballers who can really play if they have an opportunity to play, but the reality is now that you know, the game increasingly is becoming about negativity, and it's becoming extremely difficult to watch and very wearing for spectators. I mean, I'm not going anymore. I mean, I don't miss a Derry match, you know, and this is typical Derry fare, but I'm not going anymore, you know, and I refuse to go anymore. I just think it's an affront, and I think that increasingly people are starting to say that. Like, why were we? I met Donegal fans 2 or 3 weeks ago after their game against Monaghan, which was then described as the worst game ever played.
Mm.
And I mean, they were just depressed, you know, disconsolate. And that's not what sport's about, you know. I mean, sport's supposed to be uplifting and joyful and exciting, and you're supposed to go out and give it a crack. And, I mean, the reality is that the process now has become unimportant. The only thing that is important is winning or losing.
Well, I want to bring
in... It's a ridiculous ethos, because it's self-defeating.
Mm. Let me bring in Reggie Corrigan, former Ireland rugby international, into this, because we wanted to get a kind of a balance, if you like, as well, Joe. And Reggie, you know, this is something that's been levelled at rugby over the last while. And if you take out the final day of this year's Six Nations Championship, there was a lot of criticism of the manner in which rugby was played, the style that was played, and people were getting turned off by it. So is this something that you can relate to what Joe was saying? That, you know, people are putting the end result ahead of the actual product themselves and the enjoyment of the game?
Yeah, I can hear the passion in Joe's voice in terms of how he feels about the game. The game that he loves is spiraling towards the bottom as far as he's concerned. And I understand that. And certainly in rugby, there have been situations like that over the last number of years. Now, rugby's enjoying this brilliant period where the teams are doing great, and that can sometimes gloss over some things that might be wrong. But if you look back a few years ago, there was a major problem with the scrum. The scrum was holding up all the games. There was collapsing every single scrum. It was making a mockery of the game. But in fairness to the IRB, as they were then, or World Rugby, they went off and they did a study for 2 years, and they spoke to people who were involved in the game, people who had played in the position, people who were coaches of the position, and they tried to come up with an answer to it. And to their credit, they've come up with an answer that has made the game quicker. The scrum is now not as big an issue as it was, and it's improved for the benefit of the game. Same at the breakdown, where players were coming in and off their feet in offside positions, etc., etc., and ruining the game and slowing it down. But they fixed those problems, or they tried to fix those problems in many ways. So I feel personally that it's up to the powers that be to listen to the experts that are out there that know the game inside out, listen to the players and coaches. Coaches will always find a way to play within the rules that are going to lead to wins. And I mean, it's all very well saying, you know, don't play in a certain way that's going to win. But if a coach doesn't play in a certain way that's going to win, he's not going to be there next year. So the next guy will just come in and do it again. I think it's at a much higher level that it needs to be looked at, examined, rules changed accordingly to make the game more flowing and more enjoyable for the spectators and more enjoyable for the players to play and the coaches to coach.
Joe, is the scrum of rugby the hand passing of Gaelic football at the moment? If hand passing was addressed as a means to play this game, do you think that it might contribute to better entertainment in matches?
I think that with Gaelic games, it's more complicated than with rugby. You know, rugby's played in a relatively confined space because of the offside rules, etc. And, you know, they can more quickly identify problems and deal with them. In Gaelic games, because you're strung out all over the field, you know, there are a number of possibilities. You know, people have suggested, for example, that there must be four forwards at any one time in one half of the field. Very difficult to see how that can work, because what if the defender attacks upfield? You know, zonal defending was banned in the NBA. It's difficult to see how zonal defending could be policed properly in Gaelic games where players are strung out all over the pitch. You know, I think, though, that there are a number of interesting possible solutions. And, you know, because it's complex, it's going to have to be trialled and looked at very carefully. But, you know, there's no point, as Reggie says, any longer in relying on good faith and people saying, look, we're destroying the game here, and, you know, people stop and go into games, and people saying, look, I mean, I go to the Derry matches, and people just sit there groaning in frustration. You know, we're playing now with one forward, and whenever we went 3-1 up against Dublin, the one forward was beckoned back into the defence.
Yeah.
And you say, like, what is the point? In the end, we're there to watch contests, and that's what, you know, I mean, that's what we're there to watch. We're there to watch contests. These are amateur players, you know, who want to play. They want to play in the end. I mean, 99% of them are never going to win anything anyway.
Mm.
It's about the enjoyment of the contest and pitting your skills against an opponent. I mean, you think, for example, of last year's All-Ireland football final, which is exactly the way things are proceeding, you know, and everyone is now following that McGuinness template, bar one or two. And the one or two who weren't, like Jim Gavin last year, thought, look, we'll continue to stick to our principles, we'll play adventurously. Well, I mean, they just ran into the laws of physics against Donegal. So I think that we've now reached the stage where we have to, you know, look carefully at how to ameliorate the situation. Because you've got, you know, managers like Mickey Hart saying, well, look, we're not in the business of entertainment, you know, and I think it's fascinating. And I mean, I just think the whole thing has turned into dross now. And, I mean, you can see that at games. People are sitting there groaning with frustration. And it's an awful shame that this has happened to the game. And, you know, there's no point in glossing over it. People saying, you know, you should be a bit more positive about the game. How? How can you be more positive? I mean, you look at the weekend's games. Turgid, everyone. And there it is.
Yeah. Joe, I'm glad you raised that point just about the young lads and that they want to go out and play, because at best four or five teams can only win the All-Ireland. So at what point do you feel some of these lesser counties who are going out parking the bus, to use a better phrase, what point are these young fellas just going to say, here, look, I'm sick of this, I've no interest in playing this kind of G, and I'm going to walk away from the game?
Well, they are sick of it, and it's starting to permeate club level too. I mean, my sports editor in the Sunday Independent, a fellow called John Green, he takes an under-16 ladies team in Meath, and they went to play a match last week, and their opposition played 10 defenders behind halfway line. 10 defenders. I mean, what is the point? Like, I mean, I think also because, you know, a lot of coaches tend to sort of parrot what they see. You know, and also you have a lot of peripatetic coaches now who are being paid under the table. You know, what they don't want, above all else, is to look bad. And so the best way to not look bad is to come out of games maybe losing by 2 or 3 points or 4 points. And, you know, it requires a lot less imagination. It's very, very easy to play the blanket defence. It's a bit more difficult to sort of play it well. But, I mean, I met some of the Tyrone boys today at the thing, and they're just depressed. These are really good footballers who were stars at minor level and underage, and who really would have looked forward to their senior football career, and now they're just depressed. I mean, that's the reality of it, you know. Some of the Monaghan boys were there as well. I mean, fellas are being asked to do simple robotic tasks over and over and over, and that's okay, I suppose, in a way, for Tommy Bowe and guys like that who are highly paid professionals who are in essence doing a job that requires an outcome. But even in rugby, as Reggie said, like, I mean, there's grave disquiet. I mean, Steve Hansen, who's the coach of the All Blacks, you know, the team that above all else tries to play adventurous rugby, he's saying, look, we owe a duty to the game. The game is turning to dross. And, I mean, we're going to have to urgently sort of examine our consciences and decide, well, how are we going to play this game that we love? Or are we just going to run it into the ground?
Reggie, listen to Joe there. I mean, you'd have to think that rugby is actually in pretty good health, because, you know, it's a pretty bleak picture that Joe's painting. And indeed, a lot of people, we've got a huge amount of texts coming in all agreeing with Joe.
Yeah, well, I would completely disagree with the statement from Mickey Hart to say that we're not in the business of entertainment. That's exactly what sport is. Anyone who believes otherwise, or anyone that doesn't think that sport is not a show in this day and age, has only got to look at all of the great sporting events around the world and cop on and realise that it is the greatest show that there is, and it is entertainment, and that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. And I remember many years ago with Leinster being told by Matt Williams at the time that if we can entertain the fans, they'll come back. They'll come back for more, they'll want to see more. And that was very much the mindset that he had. I take what Steve Hansen says with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. Remember, all of a sudden the Northern Hemisphere teams are starting to do well, and he's probably trying to twist things a little bit in his favour before the World Cup, because he's worried about having to come up here with the team and try and get a result. But what I mean by that as well, though, is that up until last Saturday, that's fight and talk, exactly.
You think the All Blacks are afraid of us? Good man, Reggie. I like that.
We're well able to put it up to them, Joe, and I certainly say that the way Joe Schmidt is on at the moment, we don't have anything to fear about the All Blacks coming up here, because we're well able to match them. But my point is, though, that within rugby, up until last Saturday, there was a lot of talk about it becoming boring and dull, lack of entertainment. But last Saturday proved that the game can be entertaining when the players are willing to go out there, put their, you know, throw caution to the wind a little bit and have a bit of a go. And we saw probably the greatest Saturday of sport in rugby for many a year because of that. And I think, you know, that kind of license needs to be given to the footballers as well, to give them freedom to go out and play.
Yeah, because I think, Reggie, that because of these smothered defences and because of the brilliance of defending now, that the skills of players have been elevated to a new level, and that if as they showed in the last day of the Six Nations, they're encouraged to go out and play. I mean, the spectacle can be astonishing, as it was on the last day of the Six Nations. I mean, I think that the skill levels of Gaelic footballers have never been higher, because they're used now, forwards are used to playing in a suffocating environment, you know, coming up against two or three defenders at a time. I mean, James O'Donoghue, who looks to me as though he could go on to become the greatest footballer of his generation, the greatest forward of his generation. He didn't get a shot off in last year's All-Ireland final. He didn't get a shot off in 70 minutes. And so I think that you're right, that if managers change their mindset, it could be a brilliant spectacle, much better than it used to be. I mean, much better than it was in my day, even.
So what's the GAA's role in this, John?
Except that was the golden era of Gaelic football in the 90s. Like.
What's the GAA's role in trying to change the manager's mindset? Because they have to do something about it. The managers aren't going to change unless they're forced to do it.
Well, Liam O'Neill said when he came in as the president, you know, he said, look, frankly, Gaelic football's boring now. Now, of course, he was attacked all over the place for that, and then he had to say, well, I mean, my remarks were taken out of context. Well, yes, my remarks are taken out of context. I have a perfectly good explanation to this, but I'll just reserve on it for the time being. And the reality was he should have stuck to his guns, because it is muck. And that's what the reality is. It is muck. I mean, I was sitting in Croke Park on Saturday evening, and all the Dublin fans around me were saying to me, Jesus, how could you watch that? How could you watch it? And people were leaving in their droves. And I mean, it's a shame, because we're very, very close, if the right philosophy is espoused. At the moment, it's nihilism. We're just nothing. We're getting to the stage now where conceivably you could have a 3-2, 4-5-4 game. And we're getting very, very close to that. I mean, Tyrone scored 6 points on Sunday. Derry scored 4 points on Saturday. I mean, this is extraordinary.
Yeah. Okay, listen, Joe. Yeah, come on, Reggie, yeah.
Sorry, just a minute there in what you're talking about. I mean, what you're talking about, James O'Donoghue, and I agree. But with that blanket defence, I mean, in rugby, you'll often have. I mean, Brian O'Driscoll had the situation for years where 2 and 3 men would try and mark him solely. But, you know, it's 15 on 15. So if there's 3 men trying to come in on a blanket defence, that means there's space elsewhere. So the good coaches, and in rugby, the good ones, well, I mean, surely there has to be someone who can think outside the box a little bit and bring the players into the space that's been created by the defenders swarming around the player.
Well, if you can find a couple of lads who can kick points from 60 yards regularly under pressure, you know you're in business. But aside from that, it's the laws of physics. I mean, last year's All-Ireland final was won by 2 freak goals. One was a blocked ball that ended up in Keeney's hands, and the second one was a freak kick-out from the Donegal keeper. I mean, that's what we've got to do now. One mistake's going to lose a game.
Okay, listen, we're just out of time. Thanks so much to both of you for your contribution this evening. Joe Brolly and Reggie Corrigan, it's a debate I'm sure we'll have to revisit, but for the time being, we'll have to leave it there. Okay, let's take a quick break. We're back with all your texts, and there are a lot after these.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight talking savings bank.
Whew. We could have done a lot longer with that, I think. The lads were on form.
Well, Joe certainly was, and Reggie. Reggie was getting stuck in as well, but no, look, you have to agree. The games, I love GAA as well, Hugh, but this blanket defence nonsense, it's. But then, by the way,
just before we go on, if anyone from the GAA to defend the game, or anybody who has a different view than what Joe was expressing there, and even what Reggie was expressing, let us know, and we'll talk about it tomorrow night. Because as I say, there's plenty of stones that we didn't even touch here.
Well, the only thing I would say, in probably not against Joe, I agree with a lot of what he says, but the lesser teams, as you said, if he proposes that Derry go out and take on Dublin in a game of football, they'll be annihilated.
Yeah.
So their manager is coming down saying to himself, if we take these on, man for man, give Bernard Brogan as much space as he wants, Jeremy Connolly as much space as he wants, we'll be going home 327 to 1-6.
At its most basic, if you're going to stop the blanket defence, you have to have a system or a rule that prevents every single player from dropping back into their own half when they lose the ball and just defending. If you can come up with a way to do that and still maintain the integrity of the game, then you have a solution. Up until that happens, I don't think you will. And I think, as you say, if you say to Mickey Hart last year, like, went out and got hammered in the championship, and he turns around this season and says, right, we're reverting back to type and reverting back to the defensive football because we want to get better results, who are we to say that he's doing the wrong thing?
Yeah, he's the manager.
And it does
he's
look awful.
Attached.
It does look awful. But the same with Brian McIver. Brian McIver says, if I stand toe to toe with the fastest, strongest, fittest team, arguably the most skillful, one of the most skillful, I'm going to be hammered.
So look, that's the dilemma. And Joe, I think, is calling on the GAA to do something about it. So
here's some text. Declan Torrance says, watch this space, lads. There is a nil-all draw coming in GAA in the near future. As a Kilkenny man, I love Joe Brolly. Another word in there before, which you can't repeat, was said already. Apologise for the language earlier, by the way, if you were offended. An honest shoot from the Hop Gael football is shite now. John Stapleton, Callan in County Kilkenny. Dubs versus Derry game on Saturday night was dreadful. To be fair, weather conditions were terrible. Derry came with blanket defence. Dublin reacted in a similar fashion, bearing in mind their experience with Donegal last year. Hard to watch, particularly when you are wet and cold on Hill 16, says Larry. I imagine it was horrendous. I agree with Joe, a Cork man. I didn't bring my two Dublin born sons to the match on Sunday because of the dreadful game we sat through when Dublin played Tyrone, says Peter in Dublin. Maybe the GAA should only allow 3 to 4 hand passes before a kick passes has to be used. That's something like what we were suggesting. Lads, hard to call how the GAA can address the current problems. Possibly begin by stop calling the game Gaelic football, as apart from Kerry possibly, where the ball is kicked by any of the top sides, it's a game of athletes and hand passes. Possibly introduce a mark system like AFL. 13 men aside may also nullify the blanket defence element to a degree to create more space, as it's unlikely pitches can be made any bigger, says Ian in Dublin. A couple of interesting suggestions.
Ian has a couple of good points, yeah.
Split the championship into two, those who want to play attacking football and those who want to play defence. Make rules accordingly. I know which one will get more support. The exciting attacking game is another one on text. And Paddy Loughran on Twitter says, Joe Brawley is spot on. GAA becoming increasingly depressing to watch. Changes needed to bring the contest back into the match.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody, for all of your texts and tweets. It's obviously an issue we'll have to revisit again, judging by the reaction. The winner of a competition tonight, the answer, of course, who trained shut the front door to the Grand National last year were Barry Geraghty, John Joe O'Neill, Marie Keogh in County Wicklow. You and seven of your friends are going to the Grand National next Monday, and you're into that draw for the VIP upgrade on Friday. Alan Cawley, thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure, Hugh, as always.
Thanks also to Robbie and to John and to JJ as well. We're back tomorrow night.
Game on 2FM.
In association with Rabo Direct, the straight-talking savings bank.